Hi, I'm Mia, host of the Beauty and the Broken podcast. During our time together, we will hear the stories of what broke us and what healed us. How great beauty can be born out of our brokenness. How our hardest moments in life can lead to moments of growth. How we can find victory even when we feel like we're losing at life. I've personally found great encouragement from people who have been where I have been and survived what I didn't think I could. And that's what I want to bring you here on this podcast. So join me at Beauty in the Broken for real life stories of brokenness and the beauty that can be born in the healing journey. Hey friends, Mia here with a very special guest today. Christine Matthews is a strongman athlete. She is my husband's coach in strength sports, and she is also an incredible woman with an incredible story. I knew the very first time that I met her in person that she was somebody special. She has a way of encouraging others that is genuine, and I knew in that moment that that came from a place of having experienced great brokenness and understanding what it means to have someone be an encourager to you. And so, Christine, we are so excited to have you on the show today and to have you share your story. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course. I'm super excited to be here, even though you're going to make me cry immediately at the beginning.
That's what we do around here. We're not afraid of tears.
Oh, we're in for fun.
So tell us what, for those who may not know, tell us what the sport of strongman is.
It's based off of the original, like, circus acts, the weird odd lifting, like the circus dumbbell, the odd deadlifting and things like that. And it's been made into a more conventional, non-conventional sport. I'm a part of the weight class version. Most people are in tune with the World's Strongest Man version, which is the bigger, like, 400 pound men that we see on, like, ESPN and CBS every spring. So about 15 years ago, I think 15, 20 years ago, they made a weight class version, and women have only really been a part of that for the last 15 or so years. So that's what I do. It's odd lift
that,
but
yeah. And it's been so impressive, just to get to watch you lift. And I think what I love the most is you are not just a physically strong person. You're such an emotionally strong person too.
Yeah.
So what was the draw into strongman for you?
Initially a friend of mine had kind of showed me that she had met a boyfriend, and he had introduced the sport to her. And at the time, I was really heavy into drinking. And so every time she would invite me to the gym, I'd be like, eventually I'll come there. But my priority was going out at night and getting up and going to work the next day. So it was very much like surviving on the bar night scene and then working every day and then going to the bar after that. Mm-hmm. So it took her took her about 3.5 years, I think, to finally convince me to step, wow, put into the gym. Yeah, she did not give up on me, that's for sure. But she finally opened her own gym and invited me out. And she had a miniature competition that day. And I did a lot better than I had anticipated to do. And it kind of just got me hooked from there. That was the end of 2015, early 2016.
Very, very cool. And so at that point, when you finally got into the gym, I mean, what did that do for your partying? I mean, for the drinking lifestyle then? Did you maintain both of those, or how did that work for you?
I'd say for the first year and a half, I tried to maintain both. I realized as I got deeper into strongman and more into my training, how detrimental alcohol was to growth in the sport. And I was a lot better in the sport than I had anticipated to be. So I was like, do I want to go all in on this? Do I want to, you know, half-ass this? I think the first year and a half, it was a big battle choosing between potentially becoming a really great athlete in the sport or just enjoying it as a hobby and kind of being okay with just doing it whenever I could and partying with my friends afterwards. So.
So was there like a certain, like a turning point then for you, like a big event that happened, or was it just like, okay, I'm ready to get serious about this?
I had tried to have like, just like, I'm just going to get serious. I'm going to do really great at this. And I started slowing down on the drinking. And then I met a boy, you know, how that goes.
Yeah.
And
yes,
he and I would end up going out quite a bit, and drinking. And then one night after a competition at the end of 2017, we got into a huge argument that I have no idea. Like, that was the huge turning point, was this moment of trauma that had happened that I no longer have any recollection of. So I lost about 4 hours of my life that night that I can't get back. I've tried to get back. I have no Wow. idea what happened that night. And when I woke up in the hospital the next morning, that was when I decided no more alcohol.
Wow. And what about that guy? I mean, did you stay in relationship with him? Did you walk away from like all of it?
I walked away from all of it because he was the issue. So after that competition that night, when we went out to party, like we typically do after a competition, we both started drinking quite a bit more than what we usually do. And I had just gone through a huge weight cut. So that's a lot of dehydration in itself. Mm-hmm. So the alcohol affected me a lot more than I anticipated. From what I remember, the night was going just fine, but then I ended up waking up in a pool of my own blood. So between the night seemingly being really great and then waking up in a pool of my own blood and the ambulance backing up to me, that was the time that I had lost. So,
wow.
And everyone said it was his fault. There were no eyewitnesses. He claimed self-defense. But since I couldn't remember anything, it just kind of like put everything into perspective for me that alcohol definitely makes me lose control of my life and the things that I want for myself.
Yeah. Wow. That's huge. And was that like a one-time thing with this guy, or had this been a regular, was this a regular part of the relationship for you?
We argued quite a bit verbally, but that would have been the first time that anything had happened physically.
What was it? I mean, was it an easy thing to walk away from him? Did he, you know, just try to come after you? I mean, what did that look like in the initial aftermath of all of that?
Since he claimed self-defense, he tried talking to my parents, the police in the area, since there was no actual evidence that proved without a reasonable doubt that it was not or was self-defense. They basically told him to leave town and to never come back. They said, we don't want to see you back here ever again. Like, there's nothing we can do to you. There's nothing we can do to her because of the evidence, and you just aren't welcome here anymore. He did try reaching out to me quite a bit. I had to do all the blocking things, you know. I don't know if you've seen the memes where, like, people block people and then they message them on, like, their DirecTV app or something.
Oh, my word. Oh, no.
So it was like that for a little while. But I actually met Adam shortly after, which is who I'm with now. So,
yeah. And it seems like that's a much different tone to that relationship.
Oh, definitely. He's so supportive of everything. It was hard at first because we both believed I really didn't have an issue with alcohol, but maybe I just didn't know. I just kind of depended on it for certain things socially because of I did have social anxiety. I used to. So it's like we tried it here and there, and I think about 6 months into our relationship, when we finally did start a relationship the following year, we about had a huge falling out because of my drinking. So that was another like breaking point where I realized I have to be sober if I want to continue to live a good life.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's huge too, because I think a lot of times people are in that same space of, you know, well, I don't need it, or I can do without it, or, you know, I can drink just a little bit. I mean, do you think there is such thing as being able to drink just a little bit?
I don't think so, but we all try to kid ourselves, you know, like this chemical is somehow we can control it instead of it controlling us. So,
yeah. And what does it look like then for you to be able to get sober and maintain sobriety then?
I actually, instead of doing like the typical like Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12-step program, I didn't really, the way that my brain was after all that trauma with him and I didn't feel like I wanted to then run into a 12-step program that pushed me basically onto a new type of addiction. Like, I'm not going to say that religion's an addiction, but in the 12-step program, like if you don't then commit yourself to Christ or some higher being by the end of the 12-step program, then you haven't completed all 12 steps. And I didn't want to be the reason that I failed was because I wasn't ready to commit to one certain deity or higher power. So it's, I ended up going to in like intensive outpatient program therapy. So it is group therapy, but it's scheduled sessions at like a behavioral health hospital. They have a substance abuse type, and then they also have like your general therapy type. So I get to go sit in a room with 8 to 12 different people who are also struggling with addictions and the things that it's caused in their lives. But it's not anonymous, and it's more casual because then you're actually going through therapy, and they're not just sitting in a room talking to each other. If you have an actual therapist with you in the room.
Wow. That's powerful. And I, you know what? I really like that model. I will be honest with you. I didn't actually know that that model existed.
Yeah. Not a lot of people do.
But I kind of, I mean, I love that. And now I'm going to preface this. I've not been to an AA meeting. Just kind of heard about them from other people. But I feel like I've been part of therapy groups though, like common people, you know, dealing with the same issue, meeting with a therapist. And I think there is so much power in that, because it makes the journey feel less lonely. I think with a lot of these mental health struggles with addiction, you know, in my own case with an eating disorder, even depression, you know, you talked about social anxiety. I think it's so isolating and we can feel like we're so alone in that. And I think, you know, being part of a group and especially a group that is led by a therapist, I love that. I really love that model.
Yeah. And with the therapist being there, not only are you working through your addiction, but you're working through maybe the things in your mind or in your heart or that have happened to you, why you've become addicted. So
yeah,
then you can work through those things too. Like in AA, you can get a sponsor, but then that's somebody who has followed a 12-step program, is not usually licensed or educated in anything. They're just a fellow sober friend or person who did the steps, knows the steps, and is willing to help you through those steps. So I'm not saying anything bad about sponsors in the AA, but it just, it feels like it's missing something. And I feel like IOP really gave me what was missing. So like having somebody there who was educated in, you know, psychology and things like that matter, I feel like, in addiction especially.
Yeah, well, and I think the piece that we miss pretty often, I think culturally, is this aspect of addiction often has deep roots in trauma. And as much as we like to blame people who are caught in addiction, as much as we want to, you know, point fingers and play the blame game and kind of act like it's a choice, the reality is there's pretty deep roots to that. And I think a lot of time, you know, a lot of time you do have to get to, you have to dig up those roots. I mean, really, you know, whatever substance, it's, you know, it's kind of this tree that branches out of these deep roots of trauma. And you've got to really dig that up to be able to deal with that addiction of what you're seeing, like on the surface that's growing above ground. So yeah, I think there's so much value in having that therapist be part of that process. Did you do any like individual therapy to go along with that? Or did you feel like you really got the resources you need in that group setting?
I tried because I think it was 3 months after I graduated IOP, I had relapsed pretty badly.
Okay.
And it was so bad that I lost another, like, but it wasn't like a bad trauma. I just blacked out real bad on my own volition. So there was no excuse like where somebody had hit me or anything like that. And I just, you know, concussion recollection. No, it was, I straight up blacked out, had an argument with Adam. So that was the point where things got really rocky with Adam. And I, you know, to save our relationship, it was, you know, either I ruin the relationship and keep drinking because it was going to keep turning out this way, or I had to check myself in. So I ended up checking myself in to Parkview Behavioral in Fort Wayne.
Okay.
And then shortly after I got released, I think I was in for 6 days. They had recommended me to just a regular therapist. And I was like, I would really like to have a substance abuse specialist type therapy. And they're like, well, you didn't have any of these blah, blah, blah boxes that were checked while you were in Parkview Behavioral. So like, even though IOP was also with Parkview, they didn't want to look at that record to see, you know, so they didn't take that care, which was like 3 months prior, into consideration for when they recommended me to a psychiatrist or a doctor to continue therapy after I got discharged. So,
oh my.
When I did my own research and tried, all of them had such long wait lists that it just wasn't worth my time. So,
yeah,
I've not been in therapy or spoke with a therapist since. That was 5 years ago, I think.
Okay.
At this point.
Yeah.
I've kind of have no trust in the mental health system as is.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, it's definitely, it's a system that needs a whole reworking. You are so right about that. Cause man, like, what a blatant oversight.
Yeah. The way that Adam, like, not even described it, he was like, I know when you get put into a hospital and you have like a broken arm, there's this box to check, because a broken arm is a broken arm, but like a broken mind isn't a broken mind. So there shouldn't be check boxes that you need to fill out. Not every individual person should be seen as different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, especially when we're talking about, you know, our mental health, I mean, he's so right. Like, a broken mind isn't just a broken mind. There's so much that factors into that, and so many things that branch off of that as well. And I think, you know, without looking at that bigger picture is where we really are failing people within that mental health care system.
I definitely agree.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, I thank you for sharing that you had a relapse. I think that's really powerful, because I think there can be so much shame around those relapses. But I have told people frequently, I've said it in regards to, you know, substance use. I've said it in regards to eating disorders. A failure doesn't make you a failure.
Right. It's a lesson. Cause I mean, how many times when you were learning to do times tables in elementary school, did you just get it right the first time? Like,
never.
So it's like, just like with everything else, when you're doing something new and you're doing something hard and you're doing something that challenges you, it's going to keep challenging you to show you what is on the other side. Like, and if you keep knowing that you're worth it and it's worth the time and it's worth the effort, you will get to that other side eventually. But just like with everything else, you have to put in the work and you have to be willing to put in the work.
Ooh, I love that. Sobriety is a learning process.
It is.
I think so often we try to look at it as like an all or nothing.
Yeah, because, well, it's because you never know. One relapse could be the last, you know, like there's no right way or wrong way to relapse. Like, you don't know.
Well, yeah.
Like, especially when it comes to other substances than alcohol, because when you are addicted to a hard drug, your tolerance rises. And if you are taking a pill or injecting a fluid, and your tolerance is X, and then when you're sober for a year and you have your first relapse and you try to go back to that same tolerance, that is when it's not, you know, it might not end up working out. that's where overdoses happen, I think, and where a relapse is seen as a bad thing, because it can really be the end all be all.
I feel like, though, if we could start looking at it as this learning process, I feel like there's so much grace in that. Not that you want that relapse, obviously, right, because, like you said, that, you know, that can be life threatening. But I think if we just look at it as this, like, you may not get it right, exactly right the first time. But it's just kind of that journey that you have to walk out and you have to learn along. I mean, you even think of walking is very natural, but we have to learn to do that too.
Right. And we have to fall down and we have to get back up and just keep doing it. And then eventually you don't remember all the times you fell when you were a year old, a year and a half. And then next thing you know, walking's just normal. Like, it just feels like, yeah, you've always been able to do it. And I think that's also something where, like, with public health system instead of private, where they have the injection sites where you can go and there's actually nurse on staff to help ensure that you have a clean needle. If you're relapsing, you have the proper, you're not going to overdose. Like, they're going to be there monitoring you.
Yeah.
And so, like, in bigger cities like New York and things like that, they have these public injection sites where people who do have, are struggling with addiction can at least go somewhere where they know they're going to get treated like human beings while they're still struggling with this addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I've been pretty pleased because, you know, right here local to us in Northern Indiana in South Bend, we actually have a harm reduction organization like that. And so it was really enlightening to be able to talk to them and just kind of learn about what they do, you know, providing clean needles, providing clean condoms, and just helping reduce those risks within, you know, that addiction.
I know, it's like steps, it's things like that will make people feel comfortable with trying to get clean. Like, everyone, yes, on the other side is going to view it as just a place where these quote unquote junkies can go get high. But it's like, it's a place where these people who are struggling mentally with an addiction can go and make sure they're not going to continue to ruin their body and their lives while they're struggling to get sober.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I've even heard that about this organization, Imani and Unidad is what it's called. You know, like, oh, well, that's enabling. Well, the reality is while you're giving those clean supplies, you're building relationship, you're creating a safe space, and ultimately they offer that recovery counseling right there in the community. And it's affordable as well, because I think, you know, for a lot of populations, it's mental health care just isn't even affordable.
Right.
Like, it's not accessible.
I think me going to the ER and admitting myself to Parkview Behavioral for 6 days, I think it ended up costing us $4,500.
Yeah. It's wild.
It's like, we want people to get better, but they can't afford to get better. It's cheaper. Yeah. To go get high. It's cheaper to go down to the liquor store at the end of your shift and spend $20 on a bottle of booze.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you look at, okay, where do things need to be fixed to really combat this, you know, addiction crisis in the country? And, you know, that's where it starts at is, okay, how do we make this more accessible for people so that it isn't easier to go get drunk, go get high than it is to go get help?
Yeah. I wish I had the answer.
I know, me too. And I even work in healthcare and I'm like, I wish I had the answer. Well, and then, so you've also used the strength training as part of that sobriety journey as well, right?
Definitely. So that was something that kept me going basically every day. You know, like, I have to go to the gym after work today and I have to go do this. So if I want to be able to get in a good workout, I have to make sure I'm eating right and I'm making sure I'm sleeping right. And you can't really eat or sleep properly if you're drunk. Like, the more you drink, the less likely your sleep patterns are going to be appropriate and things like that. So dedicating myself to myself, honestly, as a holistic human being and not just seeing myself as somebody just to get by, you know, I wanted more than what I had. So, and to be able to do that, I had to definitely make quite a few adjustments and focus on strongman. So I think from 2018 to now, that's what I've poured myself into the most, for sure.
And it seems like such a strong and supportive community too.
Yeah. If you, if you open yourself up and within the community and you show who you are and what you're capable of, it welcomes the same from everybody else. Cause strongman is a weird sport. It's full of a bunch of weird people. I'm going to be honest. Like, we're not, I mean, you want to lift a 200-pound rock on your shoulder and stand there with it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to be real special. Like,
yeah, a little crazy for that.
Little misfit toy, you know? So
yeah,
a lot of people want to dog on us women because most of us, you know, have shaved heads, a colored hair, you know, like we have piercings, tattoos, and we're all maybe a little bit alternative when it comes to how we appear. But it's like at the end of the day, we all love and support each other. Especially in the weight class that I have been a part of, the 140-pound and under women. The last 3 years, I've been to all the high-level shows, so I've been competing with almost the same 12 to 20 women for the last 3 years at every competition. So we've kind of fostered this sisterhood with each other, and where there's no day that goes by now that I'm not talking to at least one or two of them.
Yeah, and I love that, because I think, especially as women, it's really easy for us to be competitive with each other. And get really ugly in that. And I don't know that that's always even a reflection on the other woman. Sometimes it's just a reflection on ourselves and our insecurities. And it's almost like we feel like the success is a pie and there's only so many pieces to go around.
Right.
but what I've loved to see of you is, you know, watching your social media around these competitions is, I mean, you are championing these women. You know, you guys are all posting each other's successes, how excited you are for each other. And I love seeing that. And that has to be such a huge part of your desire to stay sober, is just getting to continue to be in those positive relationships.
That's definitely a huge part of it. Like, and they all respect the fact, some of them, like, they love to drink and some of them don't love to drink. But then I'm like in the hard middle where it's like, I don't love not drinking either, but I just love being sober. So it's like, I don't know. It's this weird polarizing effect where I kind of want to drink all the time, but I don't ever want to get drunk. So like an ambassador now for Athletic Brewing Company. And that's kind of helped that polarizing effect where like, I still get to drink beer, but it doesn't have alcohol in it.
Yeah.
So like I can sit and hang with my girls, you know, while they're drinking their liquor, their beer, their wine, and I can have my little non-alcoholic beer with them and they aren't judging me or telling me, you know, I'm weird for drinking it. I mean, they might give me a weird look, but it's.
But we've established that you all are already weird. So it's okay, right?
Definitely.
Well, and you coach as well. You coach other people in the sport.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean that, so I feel like not only are you staying sober for you, but now you've got this legacy that you're carrying on within that as well, within your sobriety. That is, I mean, it is affecting other people now, right?
Yeah. Like, so now that I know I'm not drinking, I have time for other things. You know, I'm traveling once or twice a weekend now to go volunteer at competitions or work at competitions, commentate, judging, emceeing, loading, unloading weights and things like that. But then I'm also, I have on average, typically about 10 clients at any given time. I try not to go too much above that just because of the fact that I feel like with how busy I am and the fact that I still work a full-time job, I can't cater to them the way that they need me. Like, I feel like every athlete comes to me because they trust me and I don't want to not be able to give them my whole coaching experience, I guess is the best way to explain that. I was not sober, I would definitely not be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, I personally, like I feel like even I benefit from your sobriety. I know that probably sounds crazy, but I just, you know, seeing the way that you coach my husband and you encourage my husband in a way that I can't, to be quite frank. And in a way that not many people can. And so you are able to just kind of meet him where he is at. You can push him further than he thinks he can go. The best lifting I've ever seen him do in a competition
is when you are right there with him. And so I love seeing this again, like, yes, you got sober out of a commitment to yourself, but then seeing how that has trickled out to other people, because I know that my husband is not the only one who's gotten to benefit from your dedication to the sport and your dedication to sobriety. And so I love just seeing how, you know, your story is already affecting other people.
Well, thank you. That's my big plan. I mean, there's something inside of me now at this point that tells me to keep going, because there's something really great on the other side. I don't know what it is, what it looks like, but I can feel it. So it's been pretty exciting, especially the last couple of years. I feel like every year it gets bigger, that feeling. Like, just keep going. There's something really close. Like, you just got to keep pushing. Like, I know it's really hard when things get tough to not turn to something that takes it all away for a little while. But
yeah,
it's worth it.
Yeah. And you are actually in process or just recently healing from an injury, right?
Correct.
Yeah. How has that been? Because I know sometimes in high stress, we go to like old coping mechanisms. So how has that been dealing with this injury for you?
I'm kind of hit or miss. I know drinking will only make it worse. So that's really beneficial to my sobriety, since it's a muscle tear. So any type of alcohol would just immediately make it worse, like slower recovery time. If there's even recovery, because depending on if I would full relapse and get back into like blackout drinking, then there's no way that I would recover the way that I want. I've seen it in friends, unfortunately, who've torn muscles in this sport, and then they are also heavy into the alcohol that their body just does not come back to where they want it to be. And they either re-injure or they just can't output as much as they had prior to injury. So it's unfortunate, and I don't want that for myself. So that's been a huge factor to my sobriety during this time. So I'd rather go to bed and sleep 10 hours than drink at all.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. And it sounds like, I mean, man, you've really got to keep those goals at the forefront of your mind.
Yeah. Cause I mean, we're young, essentially, you know, all of us, like,
yeah,
we don't know how far we're going to make it. A patient. So I work in a physical therapy clinic. A patient came in, her 60th birthday is coming up, and she looked at me. She's like, "Oh, you're so young and full of life." I know she thinks I'm in my 20s. And so I tell her, "Well, I'm going to be 35 this year." She said, "Oh, wow. You're older than I thought, but look at you go." And I'm like, "No, look at you go. You're going to be 60. You know how many people don't make it to 60?
Yeah.
Like, you should be so excited. Like, there's a reason we celebrate birthdays, is because not everyone gets to celebrate their birthday. Like, especially like after 40, 50, like that's when things get pretty difficult. So if you don't have goals to keep pushing onward to get excited about, then what's the point?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I totally feel that. I mean, at 33, you know, having a heart attack and open heart surgery, like, I understand very acutely, like, how exciting birthdays are, you know. And I'm getting ready to turn 40 here in a few years, and everybody kind of goes like, I'm so dreading turning 40. And I'm like, no, I'm so excited.
Yeah, you should be so excited. Like, people don't understand how precious, like, life really is until you almost die. And that's unfortunate. Like,
yeah,
in the last 7 years, I've had 3 near-death experiences. So it's like, wow. That's like, everyone's like, how are you so happy all the time? It's because I'm alive. Damn.
Yes.
like, excuse my language, but it's exciting. Like, every day there is something to look forward to, no matter how bad it is or what you're going through right now, because you're going to get past it because you've made it through X amount of days so far. And if you can't at least get excited for what the possibility for life is on the other side of you keep working hard and trying to get through this difficult time in your life, then you're never going to know what's on that other side. So you have to get excited about something. You have to know that there's a goal, something waiting for you on the other side when it gets hard. Cause if not, if you're just going to live in the hard, it's never going to get easy again. Like,
yeah,
blows my mind. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. I'm just thinking, like, you're right. We get, you know, I even think of in the last few years, I feel like as a culture, we've gotten pretty negative about things.
Like, oh, agreed.
It, you know, and it's
crushes, I mean, my soul.
Yes, it is. It's so hard. And we have a tendency to like allow those hard things, like whatever it is, the economy, the pandemic, you know, so many injustices, and we kind of let that become our total focus. And you're right. Like, that's so just soul crushing. And we just, you know, have to be able to focus on, okay, what is the good around me? Like, what is the good, and how can I be the good too?
Yeah. Cause it's so contagious. Like, even if you just are walking down the street and somebody is walking and you just simply flash a smile at them and just keep going, like not one of the quirky little, like, curl up the sides of your mouth smile, like no teeth showing, but no, like legitimately look at them like you're happy to see them. They might not know who you are, but you are going to spark a little bit of joy inside of them somewhere.
Yes, absolutely. And our preteen, he always, because if I see something in somebody, like I give compliments to strangers all the time. And I always get this from him, like, Mom, why do you have to say things to people you don't even know? It's like, you don't know. You really don't know what they're going through.
They could have woken up and their cat maybe needed to go to the hospital this morning. And so they're not doing great. And the minute you say, hey, you know, you look awesome today. And I really like this, you know, the smile on your face. Like, maybe they chuckled about something on their phone for just a split second. And then it gives them a perspective, a new perspective, even if it's just for 1 second.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I, you know, I even think in 2020 during the pandemic, I was so sick. But one of the gifts that I got in that season was I really got to see the good of people around me. When it felt like so much was negative, but there were so many people that like rushed in to take care of me. And it was people from any and every walk of life, like the whole spectrum, people that might be in an all out Facebook fight if they were, you know, posting together or something like that. But I really got to see the good of so many people in that season, and kind of got to, I don't want to say guard my heart, but a little bit guarded my heart against all of that negativity. And truthfully, that is what helped me get through that hard season, is knowing that I wasn't doing it alone, that there were people who cared, and there were people that were kind of dragging me along with them.
Right. And it can always be the other way too. So it's like we have, like, if there are people during a hard time of your life who don't help you see the good, then those are people that aren't meant to be in that season of your life anymore. So it's, and that's another hard thing to go through, is realizing when people have, you know, your time with them in your life is probably not any longer, or time to cut it off, or at least have a conversation and maybe give them a new perspective. Because when you're going through something, having negative people around you all the time, or people who just want to continue to bring you down, is going to keep you in that dark
spot. Yeah. I mean, it really is. Like, you can either let those people like fuel your fire, or like pour gasoline on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like your friend who bugged you for 3.5 years to go to the gym.
Right. And it really just set a whole chain in motion.
Yeah. I mean, and it does speak to the importance of like just being faithful to people and encouraging people and sticking by people, even when it's hard, because her persistence in that, in you going to the gym, which probably felt like a really simple request in the moment of like, hey, let's go to the gym. Hey, let's do strongman. Hey, let's lift some heavy stuff together. Probably seemed like a pretty insignificant request, but just to see how that constant invitation and making space for you, and that really has like set your life on such a beautiful course.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, so I started a new, I don't know how often you're on Instagram, but they have these things called channels now, where the creator of the channel is the only person who can essentially speak in the channel. But then you can like put up submission boxes or do like a poll or things like that where people can react or communicate via that way. Mm-hmm. And I've created one. I think it's been up now for 6 weeks. I got about 141 people in the channel. And it's my little panda positivity corner. So in the sport of strongman, I'm known as Panda. Yes. And so this is where my followers and my friends come to kind of one every other week. We do kind of like a negative submission box where like, what's something you're struggling with right now? And then I get to respond to all these struggles that that they are willing to open up to me about. And I kind of like give them a new perspective. So I try to like, I don't know, encourage people to open up. I let them know it's hard. Like, you don't have to be here. You can be here just to read what I'm letting other people know. Like, it's important to see other perspectives. But
yeah,
this is just my way of saying, you know, if you are willing to open up, I'm going to be willing to help you through this moment, even if I can't actually help you. And then the next weeks we'll do something positive. So it's like, what's something you're looking forward to next week or something like that. So that way everyone can share something exciting.
I love that. And apparently I need to get on Instagram and figure out what channels are all about, because I need to hop on Panda's Positivity Corner. I love that. I love that. Cause you know,
it's really helped me too. So
yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's good for the people like on the channel, but man, how good it is for you as well. And you know, I know like social media gets so demonized, but I think it can be such an encouraging space if we let it and if we use it for those purposes.
Right. Like we can create quote unquote safe spaces, you know, yeah. Like you don't, and the block button is so easy to use. Like so many people are afraid to block people because people are like, well, they'll call me out or they'll tell me I'm XYZ if I block them. It's like, who cares? Yeah. Like they're adding, what are they adding to your life besides all this negativity? Like, right. Do you even know who they are? Like sometimes it's just random people. So right. Like, if you don't know who they are, why does it matter what they think?
Exactly.
Block.
Yeah.
Save your mental health. Like yes. You are number one priority. And that's another thing that's kind of helped me a lot with my sobriety is before I would reach blackout drunk, there would be this version of me that in my hometown I was afraid to be, which is the person that we all see now. Mm. So like the girl that is really excited to see everybody, or if there's somebody sitting at the bar by themselves and maybe look sad, I would go up and sit down and talk to them and ask them if it was okay if we hung out. Aww. Like kind of thing. Or like if there was a really awesome song on, I would push tables aside and I'd create a dance floor, you know, just basically the same bubbly person that I am now that I'm sober. But that was the person I was afraid to be in my hometown because I lived in a small community in northeastern Indiana. I don't want to sound stereotypical, but it was full of white people who didn't really see any other culture besides the culture that we grew up around. So it's, and Huntington, Indiana was one of the higher KKK cities in the north.
Yep, it sure is.
So it's like there was a lot of deep racism, homophobic behavior, even still in early 2000s. I would say still to this day.
Yeah.
So anybody who maybe was a little bisexual, homosexual, or anything other than a straight white person got seen as unholy, unworthy, all the things basically get made fun of. So it's like, I didn't feel like I could be myself in that community. I was very afraid to be myself in that community for the longest time until I've met a pretty wonderful group of people early on in my strongman journey, and they were all very welcoming. They're all still very welcoming of me and who I am now. They're a big part of my sober journey as well, and I'm grateful that I still have those connections in my life, even though I don't live there any longer. Because they also saw who I was sober when I was the same person drunk, and they still accepted me. So it's not like, so they kind of helped me know that it was okay to continue to be this person and to let her out without the alcohol kind of
Yeah, because really, I just love you, girl. Like, you really are. And it's so sad to me to think that this person who I look at is just, like, such a beautiful light in this world and, like, such a fierce advocate and encourager for other people. And it just breaks my heart to think that that was somebody you felt like you couldn't be.
I tried very hard to be like everybody else, you know, like, yeah, to fit in. And I feel like, you know, when you're growing up, everyone kind of goes through that stage where you kind of have to make a decision whether you're going to just be what's comfortable for you, or yeah, you're going to try and fit in with everybody else because you no longer want to be the outcast. And that's kind of, I played sports, but I was never like the jock. And then I had a lot of friends who were in band. So but I wasn't in band. So it's like, I couldn't fit in with that group of people either. But then I also had like some goth friends that I really enjoyed hanging out with and playing video games with. And I sat with them at lunch sometimes. So it's like, I would be at school in my basketball uniform on a Friday, sitting at the lunch table with everyone who's got like black nails, chains, and baggy pants on, and then going out the next day with, you know, like everybody else. So it's like I'm surrounded by all these people who felt like they knew who their identities were, but I didn't know what my identity was. Mm. So it was just really hard to continue that as an adult, because then you're no longer sitting with people or being with people who you felt like knew you, and then now you just have to fit in with everybody else at the bar. So
yeah.
And then I just got drunk every night. That's essentially, I mean, I did start drinking right out of high school. I moved to Fort Wayne, and that's basically how my life was. It was from 19 until 27, I think, though. Then it would have been, yeah. So pretty heavy drinking from then on.
When do you feel like you really were able to just be you?
I think when it unfortunately took the trauma. So going back to the trauma with my ex-boyfriend, to get a little more detail, I woke up with a huge gash in the back of my head and my face was completely broken, mm-hmm, like my sinuses and my nose. So I had to get nasal reconstructive surgery. And since I couldn't remember anything, everyone just assumed that I was so drunk that it didn't. And I was like, well, clearly my head got hit quite a few times too. Like,
yeah.
But the doctor was like, I don't think you have a concussion. I don't think you have any type of traumatic brain injury. And he just wanted to, he immediately blamed it on my drinking. So that's what everyone else wanted to also blame it on. Yeah. And so that drew the line pretty clear on who believe, like who loved me and who wanted to see me be better and who didn't. Yeah. So like I was working at a factory in Huntington at the time, and a group of people started the rumor that I deserved what I got within the company. So, and then that rumor also ended up getting down to the bars and getting within the rest of the community. So it basically let me see who in the community loved me and who didn't. Mm-hmm. So it was really easy for me to be like, well, these people don't give a fuck about me, so I can just not talk to them anymore and I can just be me. Mm. Like, it kind of made it easy for me to just finally be like, well, if you don't want to believe me or want to see me for who I am, then I'm done trying, because that's a pretty hard line that everyone drew for me. There at the end of that.
Wow. And I feel like it would have been really easy to like shrink in the midst of that and just be like, okay, I'm just gonna like go off the radar, you know, I'm just gonna lay low, or you know, I'm gonna, you know, hide behind all of this. But just for that to be that turning point moment for you where you're like, nope, okay, fine, if you don't want anything to do with me, good, I'm gonna go.
That's basically what it was. And I finally started to take that woman that I loved when I was drunk and made her who, it was hard for me to make her who I was sober without the assistance of alcohol, but I finally got to do it. And, you know, and that same woman who encouraged me to find strongman then started telling me I was becoming somebody completely different, and we needed to have a conversation about it. And I didn't want to have a conversation about it because I liked who I've become.
Yeah.
and who I continue to become. So that was actually a huge turning point for her and I as well. And it was really hard because I would, like you said, I basically wouldn't be where I am today without her encouragement.
Yeah.
To get here. And now it's like, now I no longer have her a part of my journey. Mm. And things got so hard that it was almost difficult for me to continue my strongman journey because we had spent so much time together and that was something that we did together. And now I could no longer do it with her. Now I was on my own.
Mm.
And so when Adam finally got told, you know, told me that we were moving to South Carolina, that was like, then I could finally put that whole chapter to rest.
Mm.
'Cause now I've moved somewhere where nobody knows anything about my past unless I am willing to open up those chapters of my life
yeah.
for them. And so they just get to see me for who I've grown into today and who I am right now. And then they just get to accept me or not. And my coworkers are all just a little weird like me. We're all a little quirky, been through some things, encourage each other. And I'm just like the fact that I can be the person that you see every day or that you see on competition day with your husband yeah. is the same person I get to be at work.
Yeah.
Like I don't have to wear a mask anymore anywhere. Like,
yeah,
it's been the most liberating thing I've ever experienced in my life. Wow. The last almost 2 years have been more encouraging to my sobriety journey than I ever thought imaginable.
Wow.
Because I just keep meeting people who accept me for who I am.
Yeah. Mm. And I think so much of that is probably what you thought alcohol was going to give you, was kind of this like being able to be more comfortable and more relaxed in social situations. But really, like, that's the gift that sobriety has given you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being willing to share your journey and share so deeply. You have been through so much that I know a lot of people are going to really resonate with. And to come out on the other side, just being this person again, like I started the show with, of you're just such a cheerleader and such an encourager for other people. And I just think that your story is going to be an encouragement to so many people, whether they are in that space of needing to get sober or trying to maintain sobriety. And so thank you so much for being here. And thank you for being willing to share your story with us.
Of course, I'm always happy to share. And I just like to be the person for everybody else that I knew I needed. Essentially the person that Adam had become for me.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And that shines through. You absolutely, just knowing you for the last few years, like that is the person that you have become. And I love that out of great brokenness, instead of becoming bitter, you have become the person that you needed.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all for joining us for another episode of Beauty in the Broken, where we hear real stories of brokenness and the beauty that can come in the healing journey.